we last left Borley Rectory, we encountered ghostly nun apparitions, claims of items being thrown at residents, and headless coachmen seen driving phantom coaches in the night. This week, we'll dive right back in to discuss some of the shadier characters associated with the rectory. So stick around to see the shit show that ensues and find out if you really can get syphilis from a ghost nun.
What was that?
That's not our intro, but it's okay. I don't know where our fucking intro went. It's not in here anymore.
They're coming to get you.
By the power of Christ.
This is
me.
Hello, Mr. Fancy Pants.
Oh, happy Tuesday, Matt.
Oh, happy Tuesday. I was like, tell me you heard that too.
Yeah, I fucking heard that too. I think it must be a ghost in the machine, man.
What's going on?
Oh, shit. So Borley Rectory part two.
Let's do it. I like the ghost stuff.
I was editing the first one, and I got to stop doing accents because they're just fucking horrible.
No, it's fantastic. I think that's what's charming about it.
I don't know about charming.
Oh, it's super charming, I think.
I think you're full of shit. Oh, and by the way, happy Samhain.
Yeah, it's getting close to Samhain.
No, it is Samhain.
Oh, it will be. Yeah, when this is dropped. Okay.
Well, Matt, what do you think we should talk about before we dive into this? Should we mention the fact that we've had a few more ratings and stuff like that, and that's always cool for the podcast?
I absolutely love it.
I think they must all be your friends, because I think they're all 5-star ratings.
Well, I hope they're my friends. Those are the hardest people to give you the rating, though.
No shit.
I don't want to bust your balls or anything, but man, it'd be great. So
pulling teeth and shit.
I don't know. No, it's great. You can say whatever you want, but I think, I don't know. It makes me want to do it more. The more people enjoy it, or the more, you know, more downloads we get. And
yeah, for sure.
Makes me more happy.
I'm not going to lie to you. I think I'd probably do it anyway. It's just a good excuse to hang out with you.
No, well, that's why we started it in the first place. It didn't matter, but now it's gotten to kind of like, well, that feels good, actually. So, if you enjoy listening to our bullshit while we're doing
it, justifies the 12 hours a week you're spending reading all and researching all this shit.
Oh man, my next one's been way more than 12 hours.
yeah, I get you.
We'll do our first spree killer on my next episode.
Oh,
we got a few to go. I'm not going to give it away yet. I mean, technically we've done a serial killer, because Rock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Killed 4 people. So technically he's a serial killer, but.
Hey, we ain't talking fucking golden grams. I think, I know where you're going for the next one. And I don't think I'm going to, that might be a whiskey episode for me. I don't know. It's going to be pretty rough.
I do feel strongly that everyone will agree with us on hating that asshole.
So I think
it's going to be fun.
All right, Matt, you ready to dig in?
Let's get into some ghosts and shit.
Ghosts and shit. All right. So on the last episode, when we left, G.E. Smith, he had just left with his wife, and, they'd had enough, you know. They had called, or not called, they had notified the newspaper, and it was just a fucking shit show. So they moved out of the rectory, and then he continued his duties from Long Malford, which was a small community not far from Borley. And that's where he remained as rector of Borley until April of 1930, when he and his wife Mabel left the area for good. They fucking had enough of that shit show, and they were just like, fuck y'all, we're out.
I get it.
And believe it or not, Matt, the parish had a really hard time. It was a long time before they could find anybody to replace Reverend G.E. Smith in the Saturday Night Live band. It's fucked up.
As soon as you said that in the last episode.
The Saturday Night Live band! You can't help it.
No, you got it. It's in your head. It's ingrained in there. Years.
So it was like a year before they found somebody to replace. And so the following year, the Reverend Lionel Agernon Foister. How would you like that to be your fucking middle name? Agernon?
Agernon?
Yeah.
You sound like a mythical creature, kind of. Agernon.
Yeah.
Something comes up in a cartoon. That's like your pet dragon that sits on your shoulder or something.
Well, Lionel, he was a first cousin of the Bulls. And he and his wife moved into the rectory with their daughter that was adopted. Her name was Adelaide. And Lionel had previously visited the rectory when he was younger. You know, he was related and he knew the house's history. He was familiar with it, but he really didn't give a shit. He was just desperate to get back to England.
So he was so desperate to get back. He was cool with all like the ghost activity and everything that they said.
That's a desperate motherfucker. That is desperate mofo right there.
You got to want to get back home to risk a vase getting thrown at your face.
Vase, or, you know, getting syphilis from a nun ghost. With a sweet ass.
If you ask for a nun ghost, you're going to get syphilis, and that's how it works. Everybody knows the rules.
That's right. All right. Lionel, before they had moved back to England, he had suffered a heart attack doing missionary work in Canada. Okay. And the doctors had warned him that he may not survive another Canadian winery. So he decided to take anything he could get back in England. That's why he took the fucking job. He was like, fuck it. I'm not going to die here with all these people telling me they're sorry. Sorry about that.
So Canada causes heart attacks. I guess. England. Is the temperature that much? Well, I guess it would. Yeah, it is that much.
Yeah,
it's a bit different.
It's quite colder there, I believe.
It's not as bad.
It's not as temperate. So I'll tell you what, out of all the people that we've covered that have lived in the rectory, the most batshit fucking crazy nuts one of them all, I think, is Lionel's wife, Marianne.
Uh-oh.
She's a fucking shit show, man. I mean, let's for do real. This. Okay. So she was starved for attention. I mean, she always was looking for attention from everything I've read about her in multiple sightings that I, you know, places that I've read about, not just Price's book. She had been married previously at 15. And when she was married at 15, she lied and said she was 17. She married this Irish clerk named Harold Greenwood prior to marrying Lionel. And this Harold guy, he abandoned her and the son that they had, who was given up for adoption, by the way, because she was so young. And there are no records to indicate that she ever got divorced from this guy. It's just like, well, she just fucking married Lionel right after.
It was probably like so short it didn't matter anyway, I bet.
Yeah, yeah. She was just a shit show, man. Just fucking total shit show. We'll get into a little bit more here as we go along, but
okay.
Let's continue with the rectory part of this. So the rectory sat vacant for about a year. Before they arrived in England. And even when they arrived, they didn't move into the rectory immediately after. It was in need of some roof repairs and other upgrades needed to be done. So they stayed with the Bull sisters, who had they ran like an inn really close to Borley. Okay,
what age were they at this time? They've got to be...
They're like, they're all old fucking maids, man. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So they're,
but it is Lionel's cousins. These would be his cousins. So it would make sense that they would stay with him until all this stuff got done.
Cause if you've got bad roof, you got a bad roof going over there and you're going to go through an English winter with no heating, no anything.
Yeah.
It's going to be a disaster, man.
So it took quite a while before all these improvements were made and they could move in. But as soon as they did, the paranormal activity started up more fiercely than it ever had been before. Like,
they were starving for some energy to feed off of. Now they got some people in there,
I guess. Or Marianne was just a fucking a whore for that shit. I don't know.
Strong possibility.
Well, never know. So immediately after moving in, Marianne begins hearing her name whispered through the hallways. And then young 3-year-old Adelaide was locked in a room that there was no key for.
Okay.
Which is kind of crazy. All right.
Okay, that's creepy as shit.
Within the first 2 weeks, Mary Ann gets thrown out of her bed like 4 times. Physically thrown out of bed.
Why does it always come to being in bed? Every time. It's like I'm supposed to be safe as shit and I'm supposed to be sleeping, and then something's going to grab my toes or fucking throw me out of bed. I don't like
where's the ghost that brings me a fucking beer, man? I need those.
They're always the worst.
All right. So on top of this, there are accounts of bottles being smashed off counters, candlesticks flying off mantles, phantom footsteps again pacing up and down the hallways at all hours of the day and night.
Is this could this be like the American Haunting movie, you know, where the whole movie goes through and it turns out it's just the dad's just like an angry fucking drunk and they're just trying to block it out of their minds? Like,
possibly. The entire time. Possibly. poor old Lionel might have been drunk. I don't know. But it seems like from the account of them moving in, it seems nonstop from the moment they move in. I mean, it just so frequent that Lionel started a diary of everything that was happening.
Okay.
Okay. Spontaneous combustions, like the fireplace. Yeah. Yeah. Candles lighting by themselves.
Well, that just seems nice, really.
And then there were these phantom smells of lavender, they said, that they could smell throughout the whole rectory.
Okay, and if I can get a Febreze ghost, sign me up. I'm okay with that part.
I found some interesting facts about the lavender thing. I'll share with you in a minute.
Okay. All right. Is there a field nearby or whatever? And then we didn't change.
Something like that. Yeah, pretty close.
Okay.
Marianne even claims she was struck in the face on more than one occasion. Like, just slapped. Somebody slapped the shit out of that bitch. Sounds like she probably needed it, though. And then on top of that, we have more servant bells ringing on their own and more sightings of that whore nun.
Well, that nun just can't get enough, I feel.
I guess not. Now, as far as the smell goes, I found out at that time there was an industrial plant owned by this company called Stafford Adams and Sons LTD. It was about 2 miles away from the rectory and in the next town over. And they used lavender and other things like that to make essences for scents and in perfumes and flavoring and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, that claim's over then. That doesn't count anymore.
Yeah. I was going to say, I lived in Champaign, Illinois for a while, and there's a craft plant there, and I don't give a fuck where you're at. 10 miles away, if the wind's blowing in the right direction, that's all you can fucking smell.
Well, I live, it's a good, I don't know, 45-minute drive from Decatur where they got the Staley's plant. And we if the wind's blowing the right way, you can still smell that soybean shit that they do.
Yeah.
It's fucking awful. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to throw that out.
That's right.
It's way too easy.
I gotta pee, Matt. I'll be right back.
You leave that shit in there too.
Hey, Jamie, edit this out, would you?
Yeah. Do we have a Jamie?
I don't know. We just made a ghost one, I think.
I got a ghost Jamie to edit some shit for us. That's fantastic. I'm gonna do the same.
I can breathe now. All right. So yeah, I think that whole lavender thing was probably just happenstance, you know, could be easily explained.
I would get it if you'd done some kind of cleansing or some shit like that, and then you smelled it, you would think, well, it would probably be a relief to you, even if you knew that it was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to throw that out.
All right. So in March of 1931, they've only been in the rectory. They've been in the rectory for less than a year.
Okay.
The Foysters put out an ad for a lodger. And by the Foysters, I mean this crazy bitch put out an ad for a lodger.
What's a lodger?
Just someone to rent.
Okay. All right.
And soon after she put it out, this guy named Frank Pierce, who preferred to call himself Francois Darlet.
What a fucking asshole.
No. He was fucking English, born in England, no fucking French relation, just wanted to be a Frenchman.
He just wanted to sound fancy.
My name is Francois Darlet.
Well, so, there's no way I could tolerate that dude.
Yeah.
Just from the beginning.
This guy, he moves into one of the smaller houses on the property. Maybe the cottage house. It's not really, it doesn't say.
Okay.
And Frank has a young son named Douglas, and Marianne thought, you know, hopefully this would be a suitable playmate for Adelaide, their kid, you know?
Okay. So he's got it. Oh, well, that makes sense. Then you'd move him in. He's got a kid that's about the same age as the other one. And okay.
All right. Then that way she's got somebody she can play with, you know? So,
all right.
So not long after Frank moves in, like within 2 months,
okay,
Frank and Marianne start having an affair.
Uh-oh. Nasty time. Old Francois is laying the pipe. Okay.
Yeah. Francois.
Was there a problem with the relationship she was going through, or was this just
apparently
extra pounding?
While Marianne and Lionel's, like, their emotional connection and their emotional relationship was really good.
Okay.
Their love life was like non-existent.
Oh, the old limpy.
Yeah. So,
okay. That makes sense.
So it's said that she found Frank to be utterly appalling to talk to, but apparently
he's got a stiff cock. So it's okay.
He quote unquote filled her.
He certainly did.
Needs in other areas. Yeah. So now you're like, we're a fucking total soap opera mode now, right?
Oh, it's getting crazy. Yeah, man.
Yeah. And plus, you know, this chick was, Marianne seemed like I said, she's the craziest batshit bitch of all of them.
Okay. So if she's crazy, then I bet the sex was amazing. So
probably. Yeah. Probably.
Let's let that go. Todd's not here.
I didn't say it. So, hey, speaking of the devil,
I was reaching into my
phone. Here. I got my phone on silent right now. And guess what? Todd just texted me and said, are you recording?
Just reached into my inner Todd to pull that out.
Yeah. Make you fucking come up with a disclaimer before this episode, asshole. So after about a year of living with all this nonstop paranormal activity in the home,
I feel like the majority of the paranormal activity just makes you want to cheat on your spouse. It seems like
wow.
Whatever this energy is, it's just like
that much more reason to get the fuck out of there, I guess. I don't know. It's
driving it.
Right? So Ethel Bull, one of the Bull sisters, she suggests to Lionel that he should contact Harry Price because, you know, he knows everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Lionel does. And in October of that year, 1931, Harry Price returns to Borley. And he brings two members of the National Laboratory for Psychical Research, which we mentioned earlier, is the little bullshit society that he made up for himself. Okay.
That sounds like fun. I bet they're fun people to hang out with.
Well, I bet they just, they're yes men, I'm guessing.
Hey, well, if they're hanging out with him, well, okay.
I bet he pays them, so yeah.
Yep.
So during Price's first visit back, he claims to experience paranormal activity that seems different from his previous visits. And he sits down and listens to the Foysters' accounts of phenomena that they had experienced. Then he does his routine check of the rectory and the grounds, blah, 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 blah. And then he reenters the rectory. Okay. So then he goes down to the cellar and he claims that a wine bottle is thrown down the stairs into the cellar at him, and it smashes right in front of him. But unlike his previous visits to the rectory, he knows he's not alone in the house this time. He knows that Marianne is upstairs.
Yeah. So does he thinks she's chucking bottles at him?
Yeah, that's what he thinks.
Okay.
Which I'll tell you what, I would fucking buy that for sure.
Well, this sounds like the Amityville horror thing.
Yeah.
Like when they went through it and the dude that was writing the book sat down and talked with them and he made a mint and they got like $300,000 or something. That dude made like $8 million.
Well, that's why you get that shit in writing, man. Before you sign on the dotted line.
It works.
So on the same visit, same things had happened as previously. Servant bells ring on their own. Keys fall out of the doors on the ground floor. And then also something different happened this time. While he's sitting on the floor of the dining room in the dark, several 22-year-old girls jumped out of a giant birthday cake that appeared from thin air and proceeded to make them Jaeger bombs.
How do I get that to happen?
Why the girls pole dance for them for approximately 45 minutes.
That sounds like a fantastic evening.
I'm not going to lie to you. I just made that part up.
Okay. I was going to say, what were they drinking?
Jaeger bombs, man. I said Jaeger bombs, right?
Leave the Red Bull out. Just give me the Jaeger.
I can't back that up.
Got no proof behind that.
Right. All right. So before leaving, Reverend Forster gives his diary to Price and, you know, explaining all the happenings. And Harry says, okay, I'll borrow it. But Reverend Forster says he makes him, Harry, promise not to publish any of the material. Okay. And guess what? That motherfucker broke his fucking promise. And every one of those fucking notes can be found in this book that he wrote. Yeah,
I don't believe it for a second. There's no way this trustworthy individual would have went back on his word.
Okay. So on the second visit for Harry Price that he comes back to the rectory and investigates, he brings his two colleagues from the National Laboratory for Psychical Research and they have dinner with the Foysters. All right. And Harry Price apparently brought two bottles of wine with him to this meal.
Nope.
And when the meal is ready, Marianne goes to the kitchen to get the wine and she brings the bottles to the table. Hands them to Price to open. And then after they open the first bottle, they pour glass and they find out that the wine had been turned to black ink.
Get the fuck out of here.
Did I mention to you before in the first episode that this guy was a master fucking magician and he was really good with sleight of hand shit?
Tricky okay. Bastard.
So they think, well, what the fuck? So they open the second bottle, right? And the second bottle they found had like cologne had been added to it.
No.
Oh, no, really? For real. I'm not even fucking with you.
This is an inside job at all.
No. Here's how we know it's not an inside job, because this exact thing had happened at Borley before. Once before.
Okay.
It was with the Smiths, but guess who else was there? Harry fucking Price.
No.
And it happened when one of the Smith's friends made an accusation that the home wasn't haunted at all. This was all bullshit. And suddenly, her glass of wine had turned into ink.
Well, you have to show her because she's just not believing, so.
Yeah, this just, I'm telling you this just to prove that, like, this guy wanted to believe in ghosts and shit, but he wanted to believe it so much that he was willing to fucking make shit happen just to make other people believe.
I guess that could happen.
He wanted things to be way more outrageous than they actually were. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I don't think that way. I think he came into a place that he thought things were happening and he capitalized on it to try to make more things happen to sell fucking books. Did he not write books?
He did, but not for, it was, the first book wasn't published for at least 2 more years.
Okay. But yeah, I think he was definitely wanting to make things happen. He might've believed it and wanted
to. He definitely believed something was happening.
But if you're adding to it, you're just a fucking asshole. Like,
yeah, you're fucking shooting yourself in the foot doing stupid shit like that.
Yeah, sure. You're ruining it for like people before you that had actual
experiences
things happen. Yeah.
So anyway, after this party with the wine, the NLFPR party, they left the rectory. They went back to the Bulls, lodgings, in Long Melford, where they discussed all the phenomena. They go over through the book, you know, the diary, and then, they return to Borley Rectory the next day. And, Price tells Lionel, in not so delicate words, that his wife was constantly out of sight when the phenomena occurred, and most likely behind the majority of it.
No way.
So, of course, Marianne, she denied it all.
What Price all, was throwing all, her under the bus? Is that what it?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Okay.
And probably rightfully so, but because of this, Lionel Foister basically throws Price out, and he will not let him back in the, this is the last time Price visits the rectory during the Foster's residency there, or Foister's residency there at Borley.
Well, he insulted his wife. Yeah. So, good riddance.
His hot wife that was cheating on him with some fucking guy that thought he was French. Well, you'll have that.
It's hearsay. They were probably out there in the fuckery room that was built. Taking care of business.
Everyone needs a fuckery. All right. So at this point, the Foisters, they go old school and they call in two reverends and a bishop to perform an exorcism on the house, but there was no change in any amount of phenomena. All right. And then, Reverend Foister tries to burn sage throughout the home, trying to cleanse it, but the activity always returns. And while there's a few sightings of the nun in the garden during the Foister's time at the rectory, most of the ghostly sightings were inside the home.
And of course the nun wouldn't show up because that guy can't get it up anyway, so she can't give him syphilis. So what's but
maybe
the
Francois
point?
Needed, I guess Francois is getting pretty plenty
Francois
action
from getting him. Taken care of.
Yeah. All right. So Marianne, the whore, I'm sorry to say that aloud. She claims on many occasions to see Harry Bull standing at the top of the staircase dressed in his pajamas. And there were other people that claimed to see Harry Bull upstairs through the windows as well, along with mysterious balls of light, which could be seen through the upstairs windows at night.
Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Orbs. Bore me to fucking tears.
All right, so
fucking orbs.
During the summer of 1931, that's when most of Marianne's bullshit, this is the craziest part about this crazy bitch, all right?
Let's get into it. I can't wait.
All right. So the summer of 31, strange writings appear on the walls and small scraps of paper instructing to light mass and prayers. And Marianne, please help get. And they were all addressed to Marianne Foister. All of them.
Was anybody else around to see this, or was this kind of just like,
It's not really specified if it was or not. This is all just written down saying all this shit happened. It doesn't say who found it. I don't think it really fucking matters who found it. This is one of those things. This has got more controversy in Borley than anything else that I've found.
It's because it sounds like a heap of shit.
Yeah, really. It really is a heap of shit, I think.
Is it?
Yeah. So Marianne apparently at one point wrote a question on a scrap of paper asking what the ghost wants. And then it responded on the back, rest. Just rest. And
okay, then that doesn't make any fucking sense if you're bothering people. Why?
No shit, right? If you want fucking rest, yeah, let's fucking go. And then, so it starts real simply with small messages. And then as it progressed, it gets more complex. Okay. So the third message that Marianne gets is Marianne at get help intent bottom me. And
she's not real good at spelling.
Wait. This is all going to tie in a little bit for Harry Price. He's going to make this fucking work in his favor.
Oh, I bet he does. I mean, the guy's a fucking genius.
So, you know, just like you and I would, she responded saying she didn't understand. And the response she gets back is light mass prayers and here.
In here?
And here. Yeah, that's what it said. Now, many people tie these messages in with the nun seen at Borley and with the legends of either horror with the coachman, which we mentioned in a previous episode, or the monk, whichever version you want to go with.
I like the coachman.
Harry Price would take this theory and run with it later on because it tied it in beautifully with P. Jeffrey's claim of the French dictionary disappearance and reappearance.
Okay, going back to that. All right.
Yeah, like the French nun walled up, you know?
No, there's no proof of.
Well, the only thing we have is this P. Jeffrey's claim that this French dictionary disappeared and then reappeared in a locked room when he's the only one in there.
Well, I meant the nun. Was there proof of the nun actually being there? And
No, none. Just all the sightings, just the claims of the sightings.
That's rather shocking because they talk about it quite a bit. It seems like
seems
like it should have really been part of the story.
Yeah, it's fucking nuts. So after all is said and done, many years later, okay, there is a simple handwriting analysis done, and it finds
that
all the interactions written on the scraps of paper, on the walls, everything, it was all Marianne's fucking handwriting.
There's no fucking way that's true. This is too crazy. It has to be real. I refuse to believe that.
And when she was confronted many years after that, she admitted that she made all this shit up because she was bored.
I get it. Yeah, there's no television. Yeah, I get the bored part.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's definitely no fucking television, Matt. Yeah. Oh, fuck. It's
ridiculous.
So,
found these scraps of paper. Yeah. And it's got some kind of writing on it. And you go look at it. It's a ghost.
I can't fucking bloody well make out what it says.
It's a ghost.
Are you sure?
It's a ghost.
How do you know it's a ghost?
Ghost.
I think it's fucking Marianne.
It's floating in the air.
You think it's fucking Marianne?
I think everybody's fucking Marianne.
Who's Marianne? Yeah, it was her. Yeah. It's a ghost.
All right. So around this same time, around this same summer of all this ghostly writings and shit, Marianne starts totally real. Staying. Yeah. She begins staying Monday through Friday with Frank Francois Douglas, the lodger she's banging.
Yep.
Near Wimbledon, where Frank and Lionel Foister had gone into business together and he'd opened up a floral shop. So basically Lionel had taken all of his extra money that he had and was hoping to kind of make him a nest egg for his retirement with this floral business that Frank was going to run for him.
Okay. So not only is he pounding his wife, he's funding him.
Pretty much. Yeah. How's that?
Perfect.
That's fucking getting screwed right there.
That is. Yeah. That seems like not the place you want to be, but okay.
Yeah. So this doesn't last very long. I think it's about 3 years, 3 year, or 4 years.
That's a lot of pound town.
I think it was 1934. Marianne goes back to, it's 1934 and she goes to the floral shop just like she has been. And she finds that Frank's run off with the 16-year-old assistant from the floral shop.
No.
Dun, dun, dun.
The dude that was banging another guy's wife wasn't trustworthy?
Dun, dun, dun.
I refuse to believe it. This is like a fucking soap opera.
I told you, man. This is fucking crazy, isn't it? So the following year, in October of 1935, Lionel collapsed at the pulpit of the Borley Church in the middle of his sermon. And then he's soon bedridden after that, forced to retire. And so they left that same month, 5 years after they had arrived. And that would be the last rector to live in Borley Rectory.
Wrecked him. Damn near killed him.
There you go. Died of a broken heart.
I had to do it. I'm sorry. Yeah. Once the Foisters left the rectory, it was never occupied by a rector again.
Okay.
Harry Price first tried to buy it, but after seeing how much it would cost to repair the house, which was it was in dire need of, he decided to rent it out instead.
Okay.
So he Price rents his place out and for a year. And
he what's the rent on a place like that, that size?
He fucking stole it, bro. Like, I think it was I can't remember the exact dollar or the pound amount, but it was equivalent of like a third of what it would cost to rent out an apartment, a small apartment in London for a year.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a steal. That's a steal.
Well, it's got no shitter, Matt. No, when the shit is full.
And yeah, and the roof was shit before this, so who knows what it's like now. You can't go in that room. Why? Because you'll freeze to death.
So Price does this because he sees the opportunity to conduct a full-time investigation of the place.
AKA and make money.
Yeah. Add to the bullshit. But he doesn't want to live there because it's fucking so run down, right?
Right.
So he places an advertisement in the Times and he looks for volunteers to stay in the house on weekends.
Oh, okay.
And he pulls together all these people. I think he gets like over 100 candidates that like apply for this.
Fucking kidding me?
No.
They want to live in this shithole for a year?
They're not living there. They're just there on weekends. They're like basically you're staying like Friday through Sunday.
Okay, so you kind of fucking nailed it in the first episode with the house on Haunted Hill kind of thing. Where
exactly.
That might have been where they got the idea. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I think when I thought about that. So, but Price fucks everything up from the fucking get-go with this whole investigation, right?
Let's have it.
Okay, so, let's see. 70 people he actually picks to do these investigations from his advertisement. He makes a guidebook, which he calls the Blue Book, I believe.
The value also, of vehicles?
Also called Supposed Haunting at Barley Rectory, Instructions for Observers. And it offers instructions to the supernatural enthusiasts he employs, telling them precisely where to look for many phenomena which had been seen on the property, focusing primarily on the Blue Room and the Nun's Walk.
Okay. So he's got pamphlets for them to follow, so to make sure they stick to the guidelines.
So if you're going to do a fucking experiment, you don't fucking tell people what they're supposed to fucking look for, dipshit. You know what I mean? No, it's just like, no, I want you to look for a fucking nun walking down. You don't say that. She's like, if you notice anything unusual, please note it.
Note anything. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, he fucked it up from the get-go. He's like, oh, I want you to look for a fucking nun. And then I want you to look for this shit happening. You know, you don't.
That way, if you see anything, it's already impregnated into your head that's what you were seeing. Yeah. Guy kicked himself in the dick before he started.
Yeah. So, like I said, you know, rather than letting these people see and experience things on their own without having any knowledge of it, of the house or, you know, anything that had happened, he told them what to look for. And he constantly was like telling his, oh, have you seen the headless coachman? You know, he may have not mentioned that in the book. Oh, have you heard the ringing bells yet?
God, I hate this cocksucker.
Footsteps, all of it. I mean, this guy's just
he's
just
laying it out.
So,
and he wasn't staying there. But who's to say he wasn't sneaking around in the middle?
No. He would come in and he wouldn't stay the night, but he would come in and like walk people through each time. Be like, okay, I want you to look for this here, this there, you know.
And you stay in this room. Shut the door. Get in there and shut the door, and just let me know if you hear anything. And just stomp by.
He had all these requirements for all of the observers. And like one of them would be to sit in the summer house or the sex house?
The fuckery?
The fuckery, yeah. So they had to sit in a fuckery from 30 minutes prior to dusk, 30 minutes after dusk, note their observations of the Nun's Walk. And then, you know, the Blue Room, you had to go up there and do that. And he made a section at the end of this instruction book, noting that not all the things they would experience at Barley would be paranormal. And the investigator should make sure that the noises couldn't be chalked up to trees scraping against the windows, farm animals, insects, or children playing in or around the home. I believe it was just like, or small boys is what it said.
Gross. Why is that the detail that he put in there?
I don't know, but I guess small boys were rampant in the area at the time or something.
I thought this was far away from town. Why would that be a thing?
Right.
Just trying to cover his bases, I feel.
I guess. So the activity gets reported over the next years, the same as it had been in throughout the home's history.
So they were basically just repeating the shit that had happened before.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So all the investigators, they update Price regularly with reports. One of them, which is worth noting, is Sidney Glanville. And he and his two children became obsessed with the house, and they often experimented with a Ouija board in an attempt to contact the spirit world in the blue room.
I think I covered this in the first episode. That's what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
To make shit worse.
Yeah, that's what you do. So March 1938, they receive a couple of different messages. During one session, they were contacted by a spirit calling itself Sunex, or Sunex. I'm not sure how to fucking pronounce that.
Sunex?
Sunex. And so Sunex told them that the house was going to burn down that night and that bones would be found under the ruins of the home.
Well, they certainly would if you were in it.
Yeah, that's true. And then during another investigation or another seance, claimed...
Did it burn down that night?
No, it didn't fucking burn down that night.
Oh, shocker. Okay.
But on another night in that same month, they say that they were contacted by Harry Bull, who told them that the bodies of a monk named Fat Enoch.
Fat Enoch was his name?
Fat Enoch. Yeah. It's like weird phonetically. I don't know. And a nun named Mary Lair. Mary Lair. Sounds kind of fucking French, doesn't it?
A little bit. And then the Enoch thing I get for a monk. I just don't. Was he a bit overweight? Is that why they called him Fat Enoch?
I don't know. Anyway, they claimed that Harry Bull said that this monk and this nun named Mary Lair were buried in the garden.
That'd bring back the fact that that's why there's this or that.
Right, right. But here's my deal. So if you get these claims, how long does it fucking take you to go out in the garden and just fucking dig around a little bit? See if you find any fucking bones. Could have done it right then and there, right?
Did they ever do it?
No. This is March, okay? And Price has this place until fucking December that year. He could have just fucking done it right then and there. But no. I think it just kind of adds to the fucking lore for him if he doesn't do it.
Wait till December. Then it'll be...
Yeah. Wait till after December, yeah.
That's prime time for digging.
That's right. So in that December, Price's investigation came to an end, and then the rectory gets purchased by Captain William Hawes Gregson.
Man, the names back then. Boy,
yeah, all the fucking names. Anyway, this guy seems like a real fucking piece of work too. He basically bought the homes because he heard about its reputation, and he was hoping to exploit it because of its history, rent it out to people wanting to do ghost tours or whatever. So,
well, that makes sense. I mean, I get that. If he's the guy before it, just trying to amp it up to make some money, kind of seems like a dick. But if someplace is supposedly haunted and you buy it and rent it out to people that want to come there, I mean, I actually get that part of let me see what you find. I mean, if you find something, that'd be cool to see. But that Price dude was an asshole.
we'll get even more into that in a little bit.
Uh-oh.
All right, so this Captain William Hawes Gregson, he only lives in the house for 2 months. He has the house for 2 months.
All right.
And then the rectory mysteriously caught on fire and burnt to the ground.
Shocker.
Just like they fucking claimed it would burn to the ground in the seance, right?
How many days later was that? Or months? Was it months?
It was months later, yeah.
Okay.
It was almost a year. It would be 11 months. So the weird thing is while this place is going up, while Borley's up in flames, you know, there are claims that say a small girl in a blue dress and a man wearing a bowler hat could be seen upstairs in the windows while the rectory burned down. Just like really? staring out of the windows. Yeah. When we mentioned that in the last episode.
Yeah. Yeah. The small girl in the blue dress reminded me of The Shining, if there were twins.
And the actual circumstances of this fire have been discussed many times, various articles. One says a lamp was knocked over by an entity. Then there's the spirit's message that the rectory would burn down, like I said, 11 months prior from the Ouija session. And then there's also claims from people saying it was the nun that did it. But the truth is, like, even Gregson's sons, they said he set the blaze on purpose. He just knocked a fucking oil lamp over. And he had put out a very large insurance policy on this place.
No.
I think it was, he insured it for £10,000.
Okay.
So,
and whatever they got paid to rent it for a whole year wasn't worth the fuck all. So That's a pretty good.
So I think he figured out how much it was going to cost him to fucking fix this place up. And he's like, fuck this shit. Yeah, he's burning it down.
Yeah.
And he never got anywhere near £10,000. I mean, I think he settled out of court for £750.
Yeah. Well,
but still, I bet that's more than he paid for the place, I believe.
I'm sure it was.
So, douchebag still made a profit.
Yep.
All right. So it's not done yet. We're not done with the rectory, even though it's fucking burnt to the ground. Okay.
Well, I have seen videos afterwards because the church is still standing and it looks fantastic. Like
it's a beautiful church.
Yeah. The landscaping and stuff around it.
I believe the carriage house is still standing too.
Is it? Okay. Yeah.
And I know the cemetery is still there. So anyway, 2 years after the rectory burn, Price releases the book, Most Haunted House in England.
Is it?
Dum, dum, dum. He was pretty successful with it. It was fairly fairly successful book. Can't fucking talk today. Sorry.
Well done.
And because he made so much money on it, he returns to Borley in 1943. And this is right in the middle of fucking World War II. All right?
Yeah, yeah.
And
or
he plans,
close to the end. 43. So 45
was. Yeah. So he plans to go and excavate of the grounds and to try to further prove his findings. I'm gonna have a lot of fucking edits on this motherfucker.
Don't take that part out.
Oh shit. So on the very first afternoon that they're digging, they find partial remains of a human jawbone and parts of a human skull.
Certainly not planted by anybody, because this
were digging in the cellar, just as the prophecy had proclaimed, that we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
And Price obviously thinks that they belong to the ghostly nun that should be laid to rest in the churchyard. The locals don't do this, though. They think that they're probably bones of a pig. They say they could be pig bones right there. But
they are
found to be human. They're actually, they found to be human remains, and they were female remains. So,
yeah, but does this go back to like the skull that they found in the house or whatever?
That was a different skull, believe it or not.
Oh, okay. Things are working out.
So eventually these remains that they find, they get buried in an unmarked grave several miles away in Liston. And it was only preceded by Price and the current rector at the time, Rector Henning, and his family.
Okay, we already know Price is a shyster motherfucker already. So
yeah, for sure.
This is like the Curse of Oak Island kind of shit, where they're going to dig for some stuff. Oh, crazy. Look what we found, because he fucking kicked it in the hole while they were digging. He's like, oh, what is that?
Coin in the well? Could it be?
What is that?
Yeah, same shit, different day.
It's definitely a jawbone that I didn't purchase from some doctor in some
place. Well, I don't know if he could have planned it. Even Price probably couldn't have done that, because he wasn't digging at all. He's he's pretty old at this point. Like he's like fucking 2 years from dying. He's got a bad heart. It's him, the current rector, this Rector Henning, and then a local guy. And they're the only ones there. Price is basically like sitting up watching these guys work because he's too fucking old to do anything.
Oh, all right. Well, could have directed it.
This one he probably couldn't pull off. I just think it's an extraordinary circumstance that it happened to be found.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, we talked about the fact that this had, there'd been a monk monastery there from the fucking 1300s. So God knows how many fucking dead people were buried there.
And it was a cemetery in the first place. And back in the day, they didn't go 6 feet deep. And most times it didn't have money for a headstone or something like
right.
that.
So right.
it could have been fucked from anything.
All right. So because he found all this shit in 43, in 46, he puts out another book and he calls it The End of Borley Rectory. And that cements his association with both the rectory and the whole field of psychical research.
All right.
All right. So he kind of fucking seals the deal with that when he crosses the streams, so to speak. Yep.
He's done.
Yeah. And so he goes on to work. He was working on a third book. Third book. Yeah. When he died in 1948. But it was never published. No one ever finished it for him. The thing that Price did do was put Borley on the map. And to this day, I mean, there's no fucking house there. It's demolished. It's gone.
I bet people still flock out there to try
to. To this day, the people still flock out there.
Yeah, that makes
sense. And they camp out on the spot and just trying to see the nun.
And I don't know what it is that I believe the people from the past more so than. Well, of course, I don't believe Price, but the people from the past seeing shit like that. I was like, you didn't have your face in a phone all the time. You wasn't watching TV. I mean, if something was happening and you seen it.
You fucking paid attention.
Yeah. Yeah, you did. So I get it. I get that more so.
For sure, man. So after Price's death in 1948, the Daily Mail reporter, Charles Sutton, who had been there several times with him, I believe he was one of the guys that published one of the first articles that were released about Borley.
Okay.
He accused Feist of faking all the phenomenon. And he claimed that while he was visiting the rectory with Price in 1929, he was hit on the head with a large pebble. And so he grabbed Price and he found that his coat pockets were just filled with fucking rocks.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say a large pebble is a rock. And so the dude's throwing rocks at him.
Right. Just trying to freak him out.
You got to believe this, what I'm telling you. It's
and then real. Later that same year that Sutton made this claim, Eric Dingwall, K.M. Goldney, and
Dingwall?
Dingwall. How about that name?
His name's Dingwall?
Hey, it'd be cooler if it was Dongwall.
That would be a little bit better.
Yeah. And Trevor H. Hall. And these guys are all members of the Society for Psychical Research. Two of these guys had been Price's most loyal associates and had helped him investigate the claims about Borley.
So they were on the payroll, basically, these guys.
Yeah, two of these guys were.
All right.
So they publish a book in 1956, and they conclude that Price had fraudulently produced some of the phenomenon and stated that many of the phenomenon that they had experienced was faked or due to natural causes like rats, wind, strange acoustics, because the house was odd shaped. You know, it's kind of square. I told you before, it was kind of wrapped around the garden area. So,
well, that's the first thing you got to eliminate. If you're not even doing that, then you're not doing it right in the first fucking place. You got to go Arkham's razor on it when you're fucking investigating something. You got to.
Yeah. Yeah. Even Marianne Foyster, later in life, the crazy bitch, she admitted that she had only seen one apparition the entire time that she stayed in the home and that she'd fucking faked all that shit. So
I don't get that. Did you, okay. I could kind of get something where if you had seen something, you wanted everybody else to believe you. Okay, I get that part. But if you're faking a bunch of shit, once they find out that you're faking it, your shit's done, lady. You're just fucking done.
Yeah. Just like Price. Fucking done.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, you just ruined the entire thing. Like,
for all everybody.
Of it. Yeah, all of it now. I mean, the older stuff, maybe I believe the older stuff. But
right.
It was like, didn't they cleanse the house or something back in the day? And then they said it kind of turned it back into normal, like you said.
Yeah. Well, supposedly it didn't work, but that supposedly didn't work was marrying the fucking crazy attention whore bitch.
Exactly. So maybe there was something and then it was fixed. And then you got these fucking people diving into it to make some money off of it, claiming, nope, it's all still here. This is.
Now I've heard and I've researched beyond all this shit. And it seems like all the claims are actually about the nun, at least, and some of the things disappearing and reappearing. They're all still true, or claimed to be true, because there are sightings and some EVPs you can catch. Actually, no sightings, just EVPs and shit. Well, interviews from people that have ghost hunted at the church. And basically what happened, all the claims I heard was, as soon as the rectory burned down, all this shit just moved to the church.
Oh, yeah. Well, moved to the next closest place. And I did see a picture of what was supposed to be the nun, but it certainly didn't look like a nun to me. It wasn't black at all. It just
like it looks like a shadow.
Yeah. Or a woman in white, which is more, there's sightings of women in white everywhere. So
yeah,
who knows?
But our talent.
Yeah. It wasn't one I was picturing to see. It wasn't the grotesque, terrifying nun. It certainly wasn't the sexy one.
Told you. I like the baby Jesus. I mean, I like the sexy nun better. That's the one I'm going to think about. God damn it, Chip.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself. So yeah, Matt, that's the Borley Rectory in all of its fucking crazy ass glory.
Two episodes worth of, I will say I did enjoy the first one the best because I did actually believe some of that shit. The second one though, but it's kind of like, you got to do it.
You got to do it.
You got to cover both ends of it if you're going to do it. It's just like Dora's. It's like, I like the story, but also.
Got to do it, Matt. I just thought this was a good one to cover for, Halloween,
Oh, yeah. Ghost stories are always good around Halloween. It's fucking fantastic. You sit around the campfire and roast some mallows while you listen to it. Make you a s'more.
Guys, thanks for continuing to like, rate, and review the podcast.
Hell yes. And
subscribe. If you want to get a hold of us, it's easy to do. Just email us at hmfppod@gmail.com. We love hate mail. We love ghost stories.
Bring the fucking stories. Please bring stories. If you got stories, we'd love to get you on here. If you could sit in on a cast with us and fucking tell us the story, we promise not to be too rude. I mean, no.
We can't actually promise that, but I can't. We'll do our best.
Don't hold me to anything. But
I can be fine. That's Matt I worry about.
I want to hear it. I want to hear the stories of things that have happened to you. It's just so I can be, I don't know, either more comforted in my life that I'm living now or more afraid that it could happen later. So I don't know.
I enjoyed this quite a bit. It was fun to talk about ghost nuns and syphilis and how you can get it from.
When is it not fun to talk about ghost nuns giving you syphilis?
When they're giving you syphilis, that's probably
when you receive it. That's when there's a problem.
right. Well, guys, thanks for hanging out with us again. Happy
Samhain.
Everybody have a great day, and we will see you next Tuesday.
See you next Tuesday.
Later.
Later.
I love it. crazy meeting.
They're coming to get you.
By the power of Christ.
This is
me.
Hello, Mr. Fancy Pants.
Remember, boys and girls, if you're gonna fuck a ghost nun, you wrap that shit up, all right?
No one that syphilis spreading harlot.